Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. We're talking about part 7, chapter 21 of Anna Karenina. excuse me. I think I fell asleep reading today's chapter. What did I miss? That was the discussion prompt that I gave you guys. Not the best discussion prompt I've ever written. Swim said the Mum Fishy came in with the lit charts summary. Lydia puts on a deeply spiritual pose, intoning her mystical mumbo jumbo as deep truth. Tolstoy expresses his deep skepticism about false spirituality through Oblonsky's disapproval. But Oblonsky doesn't pick a fight with Lydia. She is an influential presence in Moscow society, and he wants her to help him get that government job post. So he internalizes his disagreement. One of the ways in which Tolstoy expresses his deep scorn for Lydia's brand of mysticism is through Landau, the so-called psychic who appears to have zero actual spiritual abilities. I Am Norwegian says Daniel Douglas Home is the guy the mystic is based on. He looks a lot like Will Ferrell. Steva is still angling towards that new railway position, and Lydia has powerful connections. Steva got bogged down in religious talk, however, and decided that he should wait. Thermos of Beer said, I couldn't help but think about Amanda Burns' character from Easy A while reading this chapter. And there's a gif. Hang on, have a look at the gif. Let me see the gif. You're going to hell, says Amanda Burns, and the other girl, what's her name? The girl from La La Land. Just as long as you won't be there. I don't think I've seen... What's that movie called again? Easy A. Oh, maybe I have. Long time ago. Anyway, that's the conversation done. We have conversed. Now let's read the next chapter. Chapter 22. Oblonsky felt completely puzzled by the strange and novel language he was listening to. Generally, the complications of Petersburg life had an exhilarating effect on him, lifting him out of the Moscow stagnation, but he liked and understood complications in spheres congenial and familiar to him. In these strange surroundings, he felt puzzled and dazed and could not take it all in. Listening to the Countess Lydia Ivanovna, and feeling the fine eyes, naive and or roguish, he did not know which of Lando fixed upon him, Oblonsky began to be conscious of a peculiar sort of heaviness in his head. The most varied ideas were mixed up in his mind. Mary Sanina is glad that her child is dead. I should like to have a smoke. To be saved, one need only have faith. The monks don't know how to do it, but the Countess Lydia Ivanovna knows. And what is so heavy in my head? Is it the brandy, or is it because all this is so strange? All the same, I think I have not done anything to shock them up till now. But still, it won't do to ask her help now. I have heard that they make one pray. Supposing they make me pray, that would be too stupid. And what nonsense she is reading, but her enunciation is good. Lando Bezubov. Why is he Bezubov? Suddenly Oblonsky felt his nether jaw dropping irresistibly for a yawn. He smothered his whiskers to hide the yawn and gave himself a shake, but then he felt himself falling asleep and nearly snored. He roused himself just when the Countess Lydia Ivanovna uttered the words, "He is asleep." Oblonsky awoke in a fright, feeling guilty and detected, but he was immediately comforted by noticing that the words, "He is asleep," did not apply to him but to Lando. The Frenchman had fallen asleep, just as Oblonsky had done. But whereas Oblonsky's sleep would, he imagined, have offended them, he did not really even think this, for everything seemed so strange. Lando's sleep delighted them extremely, especially Lydia Ivanovna. "Mon ami," said she, carefully holding the folds of her silk dress to prevent its rustling, and in her excitement calling Karenin not Alexis Alexandrovich, but "mon ami," "Donnez lui la main, vous voyez," my friend, give him your hand, you see. "Hush," she said to the footman, who came in again, "I am not receiving." The Frenchman slept, or pretended to sleep, leaning his head against the back of the chair and his moist hand lying on his knee moved feebly, as if catching something. Karenin rose, and though he tried to be cautious, he caught against the table. He went up to the Frenchman and placed his hand in his. Oblonsky also rose, and opening his eyes wide to wake himself up in case he was asleep, looked first at one and then at the other. It was all quite real, and Oblonsky felt his head getting worse and worse. Que la personne qui est arrivée la dernière celle qui demande quelle sorte. The Frenchman said, without opening his eyes, let the person who arrived last, the one who questions, go out. Let him go out. Vous m'excuserez, mais vous voyez, revenez vers dix, who is encore mieux demain. You must excuse me, but, you see, come back at 10, or better still, tomorrow. Quelle sorte, repeated the Frenchman impatiently. It's I, is it not? And having received an answer in the affirmative, Oblonsky, forgetting the request he had wanted to make to Lydia Ivanovna, forgetting his sister's affairs, and with the one desire to get away from there as quickly as possible, went out on tiptoe and ran into the street as from an infected house. After which he talked and joked for a long time with the izvozhchik, trying to regain his senses as soon as possible. At the French theatre, where he arrived in time for the last act, and afterwards at the Tartar restaurant, where he had some champagne, Oblonsky was able to some extent to breathe again in an atmosphere congenial to him. But nevertheless, he was not at all himself that evening. When he returned to Peter Oblonsky's house, where he was staying, he found a note from Betsy. She wrote that she greatly wished to finish the conversation they had begun, and asked him to recall the next day. Scarcely had he finished reading the note, and made a wry face over it, when he heard, downstairs, the heavy steps of men carrying something heavy. He went down to see what it was. It was Peter Oblonsky, grown young again. He was so drunk that he could not get up the stairs, but on seeing Oblonsky, he ordered the men to put him on his feet, and clinging to Stephen, he went with him to his room, began relating how he had spent the evening, and fell asleep there. Oblonsky was low in spirits, a thing that rarely happened to him, and could not fall asleep for a long time. Everything he recalled was nauseous, but most repulsive of all, like something shameful, was the memory of the evening at Lydia Ivanovna's. Next day he received from Karenin a definite refusal to divorce Anna, and understood that this decision was based on what the Frenchman had said the evening before in his real or pretended sleep. Alright, there we go. Another chapter down. You are getting very sleepy. Did anyone else think that maybe the Frenchman drugged them all? That was the first thing that went through my head. Have your say about the chapter. You know where to go. Other than that, thanks for listening. See ya tomorrow.